I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
The Chris Ann Hall Show.
Any varmint that crosses that lady's path has met its match. Come on!
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Chris Ann Hall here, KrisAnneHall.com. If you have not visited my website today, you need to do that. That's where you can catch the archives of this show. That's where you can catch my articles. That's where you can catch my training videos and all the stuff that we put out, my books, that sort of thing. And we are liberty over security, principle over party, truth over your favorite personality, which means that I am not well liked by the big government, high tax, more power government, less liberty people crowd. And by the way, that crowd is bipartisan, interestingly enough, isn't it? The party of the Constitution is not the party of the Constitution as they profess to be. They are the party of more power to Washington, D.C., less liberty to the people. And, let's see, more power to their cronies and their big corporate friends. Yeah, I thought I would never say something like that, but you know, it's just too hard to ignore these days. It's very, very sad, the place we are going and the people that we are seeing, because we have forgotten our own constitutional establishment, our constitutional limitations of government, and we have allowed government to reinterpret things to their benefit. And that's, unfortunately, our fault. And that's what we do here. We are trying to engage in the re-education, the deconditioning of the indoctrination that we have received for so, so many years. And so what we're going to do today is break free from the government-dictated narrative in our government-controlled media and talk about something that's really important. Not about, you know, banning flags and just crazy support of terrorists regardless of their political or religious affiliation. I don't understand this. We're going to arm them. We're going to support them. We're going to defend them. So this is just a crisis created by government to keep us distracted from what's really important. And so today I want to talk about taxes. Yes, I want to talk about taxes because this is something that is very important and something that is completely out of control, that our framers went through such great trouble to ensure that we would do it right. The Articles of Confederation collapsed over the issue of taxation, and they wanted to make sure that this time we did it right. And what we need to understand is that our taxation was established under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1. The Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, excises, to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. But all duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. Now, there are several things that we are going to look at in depth, okay? Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and the general welfare. Now, we're going to look specifically into this general welfare clause and understand what that means. We're also going to look into the Congress shall have the power to lay the taxes lay the taxes and collect taxes. So we're laying taxes and collecting taxes. Now, you don't believe that our framers would just simply leave it like that, right? They're not just going to let Congress have that kind of power without actually telling them how they must do that. They absolutely would not. And so Article 1, Section 2, Clause 3 says, representatives and direct taxes shall be apportioned among the several states which may be included within this union, according to their respective numbers, which shall be determined by adding to the whole numbers of free persons, including those bound to service for a term of years, and excluding Indians not taxed, 3/5 of all other persons. And then it says, the actual enumeration shall be made within 3 years after the first meeting of the Congress of the United States, and within every subsequent term of 10 years. In such a manner as they shall by law direct. Okay? So our taxes are supposed to be apportioned among the several states through the census, which occurs every 10 years. So we have the power to lay, we have the power to collect, and we have the direction on how to collect. The problem is that we have a reading problem because we don't understand what that means, and we have this problem with allowing government to reinterpret what our framers said rather than using the framers' words themselves. And so what we're going to do is we're going to look at these from a proper interpretive perspective, the interpretation as contracts require. Contract law requires that when you want further clarification on a section of a contract, you go to the writers of the contract to determine what they meant when they wrote it. It's a provision in contract law called the meeting of the minds. The Constitution is a contract. There is no argument about that, because our framers called it a contract time and time again. It was an agreement established between and among the states through their consent, not through force. Remember, they had to have 3/4 of the states to ratify the more perfect union before it would become the supreme law of the land. They did not hold a gun to the people of the states and say, you will ratify this or we will execute you. Unfortunately, later down the road, we would hold a gun to the people's heads and say, you will remain in this contract or we will execute you. How many of you would sign up for a contract where that was the ultimate way of holding you to that contract? Come on, seriously, people. That's not how it's supposed to work. So, nonetheless, I digress. We're talking about taxes today. And so we made it very clear that this is how it's supposed to work. And we established the system for in which it was supposed to operate. And we have deviated from that. Now, one of the major deviations from this taxation system, obviously, is the 16th Amendment. And it's amazing to me that we can completely overturn a text in a contract without removing that text. Usually, when you modify a contract, what you do is you repeal the clause that you do not want and insert the clause that you do want. And so when you, the same thing is with legislation. Whenever you see an amendment to legislation or an amendment to a contract, it will say, we are striking this language. We are then replacing this stricken language with this new language. When we ratified the 16th Amendment, we did not strike any language. We simply added a clause that contradicted several sections of the Constitution. We created a paradox within the Constitution with the 16th Amendment. Now, I want to suggest to you that the 16th Amendment is very, very wrong and very, very wicked in the respect of liberty. But I also want to explain to you and suggest to you that the 16th Amendment is not the entire problem. And even with the errors of the 16th Amendment, we do not have to have the taxation that we have today. And these are the things that we are going to discuss today. We are going to discuss, number one, what is the established mechanism of taxation? What is the established power regarding that taxation? What things were established to be taxed and which things were not established to be taxed? How was that taxation to be collected? Who was that taxation established to be collected from? And how did we get to the point where we are today? Ironically, we are at the point we are today in spite of the many, many warnings of our framers. And so let's look at this 16th Amendment. The Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived, without apportionment among the several states, and without regard to any census or enumeration. Do you catch that? I mean, that is so contrary to everything that our framers established. Everything. And it is amazing. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1, totally overturned. Congress shall have the power to lay taxes, collect taxes, duties, imports, excises, to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States, but all duties, imposts, excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. The very clause that establishes the power of Congress to tax has been overturned by the 16th Amendment without withdrawing that text. Not only that, the mechanism under Article 1, Section 2, Clause 3 of collection of taxes through apportionment to the states, right? Representatives and direct taxes shall be apportioned among the several states by a census every 10 years. The two main clauses that our framers put intact for collection of taxes completely overturned, but not removed by the 16th Amendment.
She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So we are talking about the constitutional establishment of the power of Congress to lay and collect taxes, and the way our government has undermined that authority. We are not going to be talking about the Federal Reserve today. That is off our topic, and you know we don't have a lot of time. The 16th Amendment is what we are starting our conversation with, because this is the amendment to our Constitution that overturned but failed to remove the sections that it overturned. Or at least, I mean, I'm seriously thinking about this from a legal perspective. How could it have possibly overturned those clauses without removing them? That's not how legal documents are amended. You don't amend a legal document by establishing a contradiction in terms. That's absolutely ridiculous. You have to amend a legal document by removing the clauses and replacing them. And so there are some serious questions with this 16th Amendment. Now, according to the United States Government Printing Office, the 16th Amendment was ratified by three-quarters of the states in 1913. Three-quarters of the states, February 3rd, 1913, the final state, Delaware, ratified the 16th Amendment. It was subsequently ratified by the states of New Mexico, Wyoming, New Jersey, Vermont, Massachusetts, and New Hampshire. New Hampshire had originally rejected the amendment, but then on March 7, 1913, decided that they were going to do it. Now, the legislators of Connecticut, Rhode Island, Utah, and Virginia rejected this amendment without ever ratifying it. And Pennsylvania and Florida said, we're not even going to consider it. And so on February, I guess since it was the requisite 36 states, on February 3rd, 1913, the 16th Amendment was added to our list of amendments in the Constitution. The Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived, without apportionment among the several states, without regard to any census or enumeration. Do you know how wicked the language of this bill is? The language of this bill that gives the government the power to collect things from whatever source they choose is not a limited government anymore. That is a totalitarian government that can look at you and say, we will take whatever we want from wherever we want. Our framers were absolutely outraged by that concept. Listen to what Sam Adams has to say. But if our trade is to be curtailed in its most profitable branches and burdens, beyond all possible bearing, laid upon that which is suffered to remain, we shall be so far from being able to take off the manufactures of Great Britain that it will be scarce possible for us to earn our bread. But what still heightens our apprehensions is that these unexpected proceedings may be preparatory to new taxations upon us. For if our trade may be taxed, why not our lands? Why not the produce of our lands and everything we possess or make use of? This, we apprehend, annihilates our chartered right to govern and tax ourselves, and will reduce us from the character of free subjects to the miserable state of tributary slaves. This taxation of our trade, of our wages, opens the door for every other taxation, Sam says, and it reduces us from free men to tributary slaves. The interesting thing is our framers did not just simply establish two protections under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1, and Article 1, Section 2, Clause 3. They also established Article 1, Section 9, Clause 4, which the 16th Amendment completely contradicts. No capitation or other direct tax shall be laid unless in proportion to the census of enumeration herein before directed to be taken. Capitation. What is capitation? Capitation is direct taxation upon the heads of the people, directly taxing the people. Noah Webster defines capitation as a tax or imposition upon each head or person, a poll tax, sometimes written capitation tax. And now we have the 16th Amendment completely overriding three sections of our Constitution.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So, what do we have? We have that taxes are to be laid and collected, apportioned to the states, and they are to be, there is to be no capitation or other direct tax laid unless proportioned to the census of the enumeration herein. So, the only way we can actually collect taxes is through the census apportioned to the states. the 16th Amendment attempts to override that without removing it. So what does this all mean? Let's look at this now. Because our framers took great plans to protect us from the taxation without representation that they were subject to. I mean, this is one of the reasons that we went to war. So here, let's look at Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1. Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises. And so we'll stop there. So Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises. On what? What are the things that they can tax? James Madison tells us in Federalist Papers 45. He says, the powers delegated by the proposed Constitution to the federal government are few and defined. Those which are to remain in the state governments are numerous and indefinite. The former will be exercised principally on external objects. So the power delegated to the federal government will be principally exercised on external objects. That's Founders Speak for Foreign Affairs. And then he names them war, peace, negotiation, and foreign commerce. And then he continues and talks about taxes. Look at this. With which the last power of taxation will, for the most part, be connected. You see, taxation was to be collected for the payments of war, peace, negotiation, and foreign commerce. That's it. Taxes collected so that the federal government can engage in their delegated, few and defined powers of external affairs, war, peace, negotiation, and foreign commerce. Madison then goes on to continue to say, the powers reserved to the several states will extend to all the objects which in the ordinary course of affairs concern the lives, liberties, properties of the people, and the internal order, improvement, and prosperity of the state. So even if we are directly assessing taxes upon the individuals outside the census, we're actually creating a capitation tax without census. Even if we do this, we can only assess taxes based upon the functioning of the federal government as it's properly delegated by its power. That's it. Which means all this other stuff that we are directly being taxed to fund, EPA, FDA, Bureau of Land Management, Department of Interior, Department of Homeland Security, Department of Education, all of these endless lists of hundreds of executive agencies and functionings that are simply not under war, peace, negotiation, and foreign commerce, but fall under the power reserved to the states, are not allowed to be collected to support. So we should not be paying for those things. Which, by the way, is the reason that the apportionment was through the states and not through direct taxation of the people. Because the individuals, if directly taxed, would have no recourse to stop the errant spending of the government. Because an individual doesn't have the power to stand against the government. You must have numbers to stand against government. You must have unity to stand against government. And the unity exists within the states. Alexander Hamilton explains in Federalist Papers 36, let it be recollected that the proportion of these taxes is not to be left to the discretion of the national legislature, but is to be determined by the number of each state as described in the second section of the first article. An actual census or enumeration of the people must furnish the rule. A circumstance which effectually shuts the door to partiality or oppression. The abuse of this power of taxation seems to have been provided against with guarded circumspection. Listen. Not only that, he says, in addition to the precaution just mentioned, there is provision that all duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. the guard against individual taxation through progressive taxation was guarded against on purpose so that the proportion of the taxes is not left to the discretion of the national legislature. It was to be done by the states. Amazing, isn't it? Now, there were concerns among the population about this power to lay taxes. The Articles of Confederation failed, partly because the government could not function funding the tasks that had been delegated to it. There was no proper way of collecting taxes, and there was no way of actually making the states pay those taxes. And so, frankly, the federal government just went bankrupt. And so the concern was, with this new, more perfect union, that we would be double taxed, that there would be a double taxation, that they would be taxing us for things that they shouldn't be taxing us for, and taxing us for things that the states were also taxing us for. And so Alexander Hamilton explains to us in, oh, what paper is this again? Okay, so this is 36 again. Explains to us that there will be no room for double taxation because of the way taxes are established to be collected through the states. Matt Hamilton explains in Federalist Papers 36 that we have to pay for what our union is doing on behalf of the states, regardless of how that is going to happen. He says, but the reason that we will not be double taxed is because that the functioning of the federal government is limited to these things, and the state governments will be doing these things. And if we have the states collecting these things, we will be assured that double taxation will not occur because the states will not allow the federal government to do what the states are already doing. And the fact that these taxes are being collected based upon the census rather than from the individual creates a taxation system that is equal and protects everyone. He says, happy it is when the interests which the government has in the preservation of its own power coincides with a proper distribution of the public burdens and tends to guard the least wealthy part of the community from oppression. See, when you can allow the federal government to lay taxes on people's heads rather than on the states, then they have the power to oppress. As a matter of fact, Hamilton goes on to say that he completely hates poll taxes, which are the taxes laid on individuals. And which, imagine that, our big government guy hates taxes laid on individuals. One of the biggest clues that we get on how taxation is supposed to work can be taken through comparison. What happened in the Articles of Confederation? What was going on in the Articles of Confederation? What was the language of the Articles of Confederation that was changed to be identified here in our more perfect union? And James Madison takes this comparison in Federalist Number 45 and tells us gives us a warning. Hey, don't do it like we did in the Articles of Confederation, because that was a really bad thing. I think Madison was saying we're really sort of glad it didn't work out, because if it had worked out, things could have been really bad. He says the change relating to taxation, meaning the change from the Articles of Confederation to the more perfect union, may be regarded as the most important. And yet the present Congress have as complete authority to require the states indefinite supplies of money for common defense and general welfare. He's saying, look, under the Articles of Confederation, this Congress had complete authority to require of the states indefinite supplies of money for the common defense and general welfare, as the future Congress will have to require them of individual citizens. He says, this is not what we're doing here. The latter will be no more bound than the states themselves have been bound to pay the quotas respectively taxed upon them. See, the quotas is this establishment of taxation by census. They are not based on the individual's income. That would be a poll tax, which we are not allowed to do. Which would be a capitation tax, which is only allowed through census. Capitation is a tax on the individual, not on the individual's income, okay? So taxation on the individual through capitation is only allowed through the census. The census does not tell you the name, the income, and where someone works. The census only tells you the number of people in that state. And through the collection of the states of taxes based on the census, the people will not be required to pay for things that are not delegated. This is Federalist 45, remember? So are not delegated to exercise their power. Madison goes on to say that each person would have a peaceable means of refusing their taxes through this new collection, through census. Whereas formerly in the Articles of Confederation, if they had continued with this unlimited direct taxation, the state governments would have lost their constitutional powers and have gradually undergone an entire consolidation. Now that's something we've got to get into, because that is a very, very important distinction to be made. That the sovereignty of the states lies within the preservation of their power. My choice, don't censor my voice. Hate me if you won't, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up. I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my gun.
Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
The states would then determine whether those taxes requested by the federal government are properly laid taxes, meaning the taxes that are properly apportioned based on constitutional delegation of power. The states will not have to pay for the federal government to do things that have not been delegated for them to do. And Madison is simply saying to us, because we're doing this through the census, the people are no more bound to pay for the federal government to do what it's doing than the states would be to pay for the federal government to do their job for them. Why? Because the states are required to pay the federal government, and the people have control over that. He says it keeps them from losing, the state governments, from losing their constitutional powers and gradually undergoing an entire consolidation as a kingdom. He's saying, look, we can't even have states if you're going to allow the federal government to tax indefinitely for whatever they want. This general welfare clause has a meaning. It is not a power that's been delegated. It is the description of the power delegated. You have to operate for the general welfare. The general welfare clause is best described through Article 1, Section 9, Clause 6. No preference shall be given by any regulation of commerce or revenue to the ports of one state over those of another, nor shall vessels be bound to or from one state or obliged to enter, clear, or pay duties in another. You see, the general welfare clause says you're supposed to be treating each state equally. Madison explains to us in 1792 the problem of expanding the general welfare clause from a purpose to a power. He says, if Congress can employ money indefinitely to the general welfare and are the sole and supreme judges for the general welfare, they may take care of religion into their own hands. They may apportion teachers in every state, county, and parish and pay them out of their public treasury. They may take into their own hands the education of children, establishing in like manner schools, perhaps curriculum, throughout the Union. They may assume the provisions for the poor. They may undertake the regulation of all roads other than post roads. And in short, everything from the highest object of state legislation down to the most minute object of police would be thrown under the power of Congress. For every object I have mentioned would admit the application of money and might be called, if Congress so pleased, provisions for the general welfare. The taxation system that they established was established to prevent Madison's warning from becoming reality. Control. A double-fisted control over the taxation of the people. Number one, taxes to be collected by the states only for power that was delegated by the states to the federal government. The federal government cannot tax us for things that the states are to be doing. And then the people controlling their states through taxation of census would actually outrage over the states paying something that the states are supposed to be doing or are also doing to prevent double taxation. So this is the same problem that our framers dealt with, this taxation issue without representation, without limit. How did our framers deal with this, and what did they expect us to do? Jefferson tells us in a letter to Lord North that this privilege of giving or withholding our monies is an important barrier against the undue exertion of prerogative. An important barrier, which if left altogether without control may be exercised to our great oppression. And all history shows how efficacious is its intercession for redress of grievances and establishment of our rights, and how improvident would be the surrender of so powerful a mediator. How do we deal with this unconstitutional taxation? We must organize, Jefferson says, and we must refuse to pay, Jefferson says, because it's our right to control the government, to conserve and protect our rights. We need to organize through our states, get them to do their job, stop paying these taxes for the government to do things they're not entitled to do. Whether it comes through us individually or through the state, it is our right to stand against this tyranny. It is not treason, Jefferson says. It is the exercise of our right to get a redress of our grievances and to reestablish our rights. And we'll either do it together or we'll hang separately. But under this system, we will surely hang. God bless. See you tomorrow.